Hi, and thanks for coming back to listen to our show, The Egg Carton, where we crack innovation one podcast at a time. And today, we're going on a journey, an Uber journey.
And the reason we're doing this is because we think our experience of Uber, the headline-grabbing multi-billion dollar company, is the experience of living through innovation's creative destruction.
And they are here to support their families. You can see around you, there are kids, adults, women, everyone. And we're here standing here together to unite us as one taxi industry, not just as the taxi industry itself, but as a citizen of Toronto.
So I'm arriving at City Hall in Toronto on the day when City Council will vote on regulations that would make Uber legal to operate in Toronto.
Rob Ford, he said something that was legendary. He said, same service, same regulations.
This is just a small sample to show you how heated and divisive this discussion is. It is down to the kitchen table.
Introduce myself. Say Samantha. Can I ask you what your name is?
Sahar.
Sahar. I'm Samantha. I'm working on it. So what is your role in this?
Basically, my father, he was a taxi driver, and he still is. And this is his source of income, coming to this country. Everyone has that immigrant story where they want a better life, but it's put in jeopardy right now. My father is taking food away from my table because Uber is taking their fares. And it's not that they don't want competition, because competition, yeah, it makes people better. But how can you have competition when the playing field is not leveled? And that's the main concern right now. You have all these fares and regulations that the taxi drivers have been abiding by for so long. And they're not arguing with that. All those things that they abide by, they know that it's for the public, for so they're safe and that everything goes well, but they don't understand why, if they have to follow all these things that are costing money out of their pocket, that why Uber shouldn't have to. And in general,
I make my way up to City Council Chambers just before the speaker calls the next part of the meeting to order.
I ask that everyone show respect for each other. Let me remind members of the audience of the rules in the council chamber. No disruptions will be tolerated. No calling out, no shouting, and no distraction of any kind. This includes applause. Resist the temptation to applaud, clap, shout, out, or otherwise take part in the debate.
It's a busy day here, and it's standing room only. I'm with journalists, supporters, observers, and it's like an unweighted Little League game. It's clear there are sides. The taxi industry is wearing yellow t-shirts, and the Uber supporters are wearing blue t-shirts. The yellow shirts outnumber the blue shirts by a factor of about 10 to 1. One blogger described the curved seats of the council chambers as being packed in like a row of corn kernels, which is a good visual to work with. And like the taxi colors, yellow and orange, they are here to stand out. Uber's flecked blue shirts, with its message, "Keep Uber in Toronto," which is written in a nice Helvetica font, intermingle with the yellow shirts. And the message on the yellow shirt is much more to the point. No two-tier system. And the other one, in full caps, "Keep Toronto safe." Well, for much of Toronto, like many cities, the arrival of Uber seemed to come out of nowhere. And yet, within months, it was fully established. Tens of thousands of people opted for a cheaper alternative to a taxi service. And this upended Toronto's entire taxi industry, while at the same time it created a whole new sector of employment for Uber drivers. In the space of a couple of years, Uber has changed the way Torontonians think about transportation in their own city.
And we've had a front row seat to this process of disruption. We've made the switch to Uber, and we've witnessed the head scratching and soul searching in the local press and among local politicians, opinion writers, taxi drivers, and the public. And this is not just about choosing to take a taxi or an Uber. It seems to be about grappling with the process of innovation in real time.
So in this episode, we will tell you the story of Uber in Toronto. But first, I want you to consider your own experience of Uber. How do you feel about it? And second, think back to some experience you've already had in your life where you've adopted a new innovation. Think back to when you stopped faxing and started emailing, or when you cut your cable and signed up for Netflix, or when you stopped buying CDs and started streaming music. What do all these things have in common? They are part of a similar experience called creative destruction. That's when something new comes along and basically we throw out something old. But how do we adapt to this new process?
All right, so I'm thinking, even though it's been hard to escape Uber if you live in Toronto, we better slow down and sort of explain what Uber is. So there's always been two ways to get a taxi in Toronto. One is on the street corner.
Taxi!
And the other one is to pick up the old telephone and
dial. I called that taxi. Now it's time to head out.
Now, I won't do this to you, but the phone rang 8 times, which takes approximately 30 seconds.
Our operators are currently busy.
And then when they finally answered...
Good afternoon, Beck Taxi.
Oh, hi. I'd like to order a taxi, please.
Sure, what's your pickup location?
Now, I don't mean to be fussy about this,
but my pickup location
it took
is...
5 minutes to order a taxi from start to finish. But the kind of hilarious thing was the conversation I had with the Beck dispatcher.
Park, you said? Garden?
Garden.
And, yeah, is that a house or an apartment?
That's a house.
House? What's the major intersection there? And you're going to be at the front door, right?
Yes, I am.
And where are you going today?
I'm going to King and Dufferin.
Oh, King and Dufferin. Okay. So it does take about 5 to 10 minutes to get to you, okay?
Do you know exact time?
5 to 10 minutes.
So just somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes. You can't
tell
me exactly. Right.
No,
okay.
It's just 5 to 10 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. No problem.
And now let's contrast. I'll order
okay,
up an Uber.
Okay, getting ready to take an Uber. My Uber app is here. Now, set up pickup location for 6 minutes. Yes, I've already put in my address. I want one seat.
Well, that took 36 seconds, and the car will be here in exactly 6 minutes, likely with a text message to alert me of its arrival. The contrast of these two experiences? Pretty extreme.
So one way of describing Uber is that it's a taxi app.
The power of technology was what inspired the founders of Uber. They asked the question, if we live in the age of mobile internet, smartphone, and GPS, couldn't that all be mashed together into something?
So that's what Uber did at first. They created an app that linked those wanting a ride to those who could provide one. First, they focused on drivers of high-end car services. You know, those posh black luxury cars. Next, they offered the app to licensed taxi drivers, so drivers and passengers could take advantage of this convenient technology. This was Toronto's first taste of Uber back in March 2012.
But then, Uber shifted the goalpost. In Toronto and in some other cities where they were operating, Uber put out a call. Do you want to earn extra cash? Do you have a decent car and a clean driving record and no criminal past? Do you want to work when you want to work? Well, be an UberX driver.
And in September 2014, many people signed up.
Yep, and after a few clicks and a few taps, a 15-minute training video, the drivers were up and ready to go, deciding when to drive and how often, splitting their fares 80-20 with Uber.
The consequences? Dramatic and provoking lots of emotion.
This guy, he's a f***ing no nice and nothing.
Watch yourself.
This clip, well, it got a lot of attention. It was an irate taxi driver shouting at an UberX driver and then actually grabbing his side mirror and being dragged along the ground for about 200 meters as the Uber driver tried to get away.
Don't you know how dangerous that is? What are you doing?
Trying, we got me already on the road, dangerous. Piece of just a regular car, you know.
The reporter asks...
Why would you put your life in danger like that?
We're trying to get the point across. That's what we're trying to do.
Are you really that desperate that you're hanging on to a car?
Well, that's all. That's
and what
that's
he said was, I'm trying to get the point across. Really, that guy is driving illegally. And what he means is that he doesn't have commercial insurance. The difference between that and regular insurance? $2,000. So here's the thing. When UberX launched here, those drivers, they were not licensed taxi drivers. But... in the eyes of many, they got to act like a licensed taxi driver.
Yet, they didn't go through the mandatory 14-day training course required by the City of Toronto. They didn't fork out a lot of money for one of the limited City of Toronto taxi licenses, once valued at more than $300,000 before Uber got here. And then there was the question of safety training and regular checks and commercial insurance. In fact, UberX drivers had no need whatsoever to interact with any regulatory or city authority. And that's where it got a bit ugly. Traditional taxi drivers could see and feel their industry drastically changing, and they wanted to stop Uber in its tracks.
And in fact, the city tried to issue an injunction against UberX, claiming it was operating a taxi company illegally, but the judge disagreed. And of course, you might ask, who, besides the traditional taxi driver, would want to stop Uber? Uber passengers enjoy cheaper rides, sometimes up to half the cost of a traditional taxi journey. And in many cases, cleaner, nicer cars to ride in with competent and friendly drivers.
Act 2, Divided Feelings. All of these changes makes me ask the one question. Has Uber let the genie out of the bottle?
I can't look at the taxi industry in the same way. Does it really need to be controlled by three or four big companies and be protected from competition?
Yeah, but hold on here a second. Hold on. A lot of the training and the regulations around the taxi industry were created to make passengers feel safe and be safer.
Yes, and we know that some of the arguments against Uber really resonated with potential passengers for that very reason.
Yeah. Do you remember last summer when we started to think about this episode? We talked about how we felt about Uber and especially UberX, which was still fairly new around here. And the safety argument was, that was really my biggest stumbling block. Anyway, I had a little sneaky moment and I taped our conversation. It's not a great recording, but it did capture some very raw emotions about this. So let's just play the tape.
At 2 in the morning, I'm not likely to use UberX, frankly.
See, it's that to me.
No.
That is so weird.
I am more likely to flag down...
But it could be someone like Ted. Wouldn't you trust someone like Ted more than some scuzzy back driver?
You're getting into
a car. You don't have any trace. You've hailed a car. No one knows that you're getting into that car. With your Uber, you go missing for a couple of hours. The police know how to find you.
It's so interesting.
This is the experience.
Psychologically, I know that it is actually more traceable because Uber, after all, is an app company and not a taxi company.
Yeah.
That all your information is there. It has geo-tracking on you. You know exactly who this person is. You know exactly here. But there's still something a little bit hitchhiky about flagging a car by an app versus with your hand on the street corner.
That's hitchhiky.
So you can see from this conversation that I was once a little bit unnerved by UberX. But here's the thing. I've come around. I've started using UberX on a regular basis. There are still times when it's more convenient to take a cab, like it's late at night and just to hail one. But I really do enjoy the UberX experience. And I like chatting with the drivers. And I've observed that they're as diverse as Toronto's regular taxi drivers. And the reasons why they became UberX drivers are equally diverse.
Of course, why not?
I'm so fascinated that you're...
It's time for Act 3, and now we're going to go and meet some drivers.
Yeah, I can. So, what do you want to know?
What's your name?
My name's Yasmin. Why you are in my car?
Yeah.
Because you request the Uber, so I am the Uber driver.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to drive you wherever you want.
How long have you been an UberX driver?
So, I'm doing Uber... Around 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full time.
Full time?
Yes.
How many hours a week do you think you work?
I'm working every day 12 between 15.
12 to 15 hours a day?
Yes.
Wow.
Minimum 10, 12. Maximum 15, 16.
Wow. So do you mind if I ask what you did before you were an UberX driver?
So I have been here almost 3 years.
In Canada, you mean?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So I used to live in Niagara Falls around 2 years.
Oh, so
I just moved here last May for my school.
So you're a student as well?
I finished the first year. For the second year, I have to wait for some papers. So that's why I took the break. Also, I have to save my school fee.
Right. Wow. In all my years of taxi taking in Toronto, I don't think I've ever come across a female taxi driver. It just doesn't happen. But since I've started taking Uber last year, I've met a few. And in fact, in my experience, it's no longer uncommon. Here's another UberX driver named Emily, who I met on her third day on the job. Hi there.
Hi there.
I'm Samantha.
Great, I'm Emily.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. All right, the light box.
The light box it is. After chatting with Emily, I learned that she's an actor, and so UberX is a great part-time job for her while she finds her next acting gig. She really likes that it's flexible, so she can run off to her auditions whenever she needs. And she really doesn't want a bar job, so this was another alternative. But she does have concerns about her safety.
Yeah, so I do the mornings, and then I have my days free for auditions, and then evenings, I just do like 3 to 7, yeah.
Huh. So, how have your first few days been then?
They've been great.
Yeah?
Awesome people, great money, my mom found out, so that was, she was not very happy about it, but right. I've assured her that my first 2 days have been going smoothly. I just sort of not going to do it when it's dark.
Not going to do it when it's dark.
Yeah.
That's your safety plan.
Yeah.
Not going to go down into the bar zone.
Yeah, I don't want like pukers or crazy drunk people in my car, so.
You're going to focus on the rush hour?
Yeah.
So that's Emily, and she has flexibility with UberX, and that helps her to chase her dream. But what about Yasim? She needs this job to support herself and even eventually save enough money up to pay tuition for her school program. Can she actually make a living doing this job?
Are you making enough money to survive on this job?
Well, if you work hard, they say I'm working 12 hours, 13 hours for a day. It's just for $200, and minus you have to account to I'm spending my gas around $30-$35. It's $150 every day. Not bad. Because I don't have any education in here, so I don't have any skills or intelligence. Where I'm gonna work in the shawarma restaurant or McDonald's, Tim Hortons, for $10, $11. I prefer to be a Uber driver or pizza delivery driver.
And so, given your options, you feel like this is a pretty decent way to make a living?
Yes.
Do you meet some interesting people? Crazy people like me who shove a microphone in your face and say talk?
Well, I see like many people every day, maybe 30 people. I'm doing 30 trips every day.
That's got to be too many.
Oh, no, I like to talk because I'm improving my English when I talk.
You know, this is an added benefit. Yeah, you get a lot of conversational English. And
Yeah, okay.
That's a great idea. That's like a job perk for you. You get paid.
It's
you
benefit,
get the unpaid benefits of conversational
because
English.
Because all my friends from same country with me, even my roommates, so I don't speak any English with them. We're just speaking Turkish.
I think there's an interesting contrast between Sahar, who we met at the beginning of the episode, and she spoke very passionately about the role that taxi driving has played for her family establishing themselves in Canada. And now Yasim, she's doing the same thing, becoming a Canadian, but she's doing it through UberX. And let's be real, the option of being a taxi driver, that wouldn't have been available to her. But what about the people who are already professional drivers? How does UberX compare for them? So you've been working as an Uber driver for...
2016.
You drive airport taxis otherwise?
Yeah, I do airport taxi on the weekends.
So how does it compare to driving an airport taxi?
Airport taxi, there's a lot of waiting. We get to the compound, and you could be waiting for hours.
You probably sit there until there's a big rush of people who are
leaving. Until the planes land. And I love Uber. It's like a mobile office.
So would you choose to drive for Uber over driving for the limousine? Like, which one nets you more cash in the end?
They're both balanced in the end, but from what I do now, I prefer Uber. You know, if I can make this a career, I'd rather do this. I like driving.
Right.
I have two kids and a wife, so I can't be a trucker. It's
true.
Keep me away from my family, but...
That's true.
At least this way I can put an honest day's work and then go home.
So here we are at Act 4. It's all context. It's not just Uber.
It's the free economy.
So, you've been Ubering.
Yeah, it has become a verb now, hasn't it?
It has.
The next person we're going to meet is Ted Graham. He's the Director of Innovation for PricewaterhouseCoopers Canada. And he's so fascinated with the concept of Uber that he actually signed up to be a part-time Uber driver. All of this research and experience has gone into a book he's co-written called The Uber of Everything. And I asked him why he decided to become an UberX driver.
I thought the best thing for me to do was to kind of experiment and roll up my sleeves and actually get involved in something that was happening in my own city. Mm-hmm. So it just happened to coincide with the time that UberX was being launched in Toronto, and they were doing a sort of a full court press trying to find people to drive their own cars around the city. My wife loved the fact that I had to completely clean out the car to make it ready for this, so that was very popular in the household.
So what Ted discovered during his time as an Uber driver is that Uber is part of a much bigger trend, a trend called the freed economy.
So kind of the key aspects we look at is not – a lot of people call it the sharing economy. I would call it the freed market economy because it's a for-profit, market-driven force. It's not just about, you know, bartering goods and services. So freed market in the sense of I'm freeing up resources like my car that would normally sit idle 95% of the time. Or I'm freeing up excess capacity after my wife and kids go to bed.
So the freed economy is the idea that someone, like me, who owns something, turns it into an asset that I can trade on. And it's something that consumers want. And, well, I can just sell it. So it could be my time driving my car, like with Uber, or it could be my spare room in my house with Airbnb.
The regulatory bodies would have said before that you are looking for cabs with this marking on them and that you can trust that brand because, you know, we've inspected the cars and, you know, we've anointed them to be roadworthy and insured and all of these things.
And now with UberX?
Whereas trust is coming less from, you know, the old institutions and more from our peers. So for the people who are using it, they really like things like the two-way feedback that the passengers rate the drivers and the drivers rate the passengers. And, you know, that's pretty, surprisingly enough, groundbreaking, that if I rate a driver poorly and my peers also rate a driver poorly, they'll be taken off the road. Their car will be removed. In the first instance, Uber will typically, you know, have a driver go through a retraining period to see if it improves, but if it doesn't, they don't last on the system.
So the two-way rating system between customer and driver is a real challenge to the old style of taxi regulation. And Uber has turned what used to be a very pragmatic decision into something more.
If you look at the, you know, how people talk about their Uber rides or Ubering versus their cab rides, you've got something that used to be a very much a functional industry that has become a much more emotional purchase.
Trust, a new commodity in the freed economy. Another feature, speed. Speed in the sense of how fast Uber grew here, same in other cities. Uber built a workforce in just a few months. Ever wonder how that happened? Well, Ted's going to shed some light for us on what the process was to become an Uber driver.
One of the first was this idea of how easy they made it for people to come on board. So, you know, for me, I was using my mobile phone to take pictures of the inside and outside of our family minivan, pictures of my insurance, and all of it was sort of done and uploaded in about 30 minutes.
So in the freed economy, rather than a company making a huge investment, with Uber, they use technology to bring together a workforce with their assets, meaning their cars. And what that means is that a company like Uber can establish itself very quickly. And Ted describes this as
exponential scaling of inventory. So the ones that are truly of the sort of, you know, what I see as a real Uber model is like, how fast can you bring in new resources or people, you know, things that you don't own, in the same way that Airbnb is able to kind of quickly turn on the country of Cuba. Like all of a sudden there's inventory available to stay in Cuba. How does that happen that quickly? I think it's sort of a very fascinating and new way of thinking of how do you sort of fill demand that's out there.
Act 5. We're talking about the brave new world now. So I keep getting these emails from Uber, and it's not personal. I'm on their mailing list. And during the spring, there was an uncertainty about how Toronto would regulate Uber. Uber went hard on a public relations campaign. They circulated a petition which earned just about 80,000 signatures in 2 weeks. Well, their emails offered a civics lesson on how to lobby your city councillor, including a link to their email and a form letter. And their pitch was clear. If city council votes us down, Uber will leave Toronto.
But do you think Uber would have actually left? Was it just a veiled threat to get us all to lobby our councillors and take their side?
Well, see, I don't know. It was hard to believe that they would actually pull out of a fully entrenched market. So in that way, it seemed like an idle threat. And in the end for Toronto, the vote essentially went their way and they didn't have to leave. But, as we sat contemplating this story, in Austin, Texas, on May the 7th, so just days after the Toronto vote, they did up and leave. In a referendum, Austin City voters sided with their city council, who wanted Uber drivers to provide a mandatory fingerprint for a criminal background check. But that's not what Uber wanted. So they pulled up stakes and left.
Wow, so they did it. Uber just left Austin when things didn't go its way.
The Economist magazine recently put it like this. Uber played a game of chicken with Austin City Council, and in order to save face, they had to pull out when they lost. It's not about fingerprinting drivers. It's actually about calling the shots at City Hall to get the regulations they want. When the vote didn't go their way in Austin, they couldn't stick around. Uber was defeated, and so Uber said, "We're out of here."
But what about all those drivers? I know Austin is a much smaller city than Toronto, but I'm sure there were lots of people dependent on their UberX wages.
Well, you're right. Around 10,000 drivers were left high and dry. But to me, when I think about it, it's kind of crazy that a company can be that nimble. I mean, just change its mind and shut down. So let's take a couple steps back and look at what the company Uber is made of. Uber is only 6 years old, and it's currently valued at somewhere around $60 billion. Now, it's not publicly traded, so that's slightly speculative. And they only have 6,000 employees worldwide. Because remember, none of the Uber drivers are employees. They are contractors, which means they can be let go at a moment's notice.
Can you imagine an old school company, say like the Ford Motor Company, just closing a factory and pulling out of a city?
See, that's the thing. Forbes magazine recently valued the Ford Motor Company at around $54 billion. So not far off Uber's apparent valuation. But here's the key difference. Ford employs almost 200,000 people, not 6,000. And Ford's jobs are the kind with benefits and pension plans. And we have seen the amount of distress that happens when a Ford factory just even talks about closing. It's a big deal. But Uber just closed up with no obligations to its former drivers.
Okay, you're helping me see why I'm so ambivalent about Uber. UberX got going just so quickly that I didn't have time to reflect on the consequences of the freed economy. I just got swept up in the change, and the cheaper cab fares, of course.
Well, the sweep of change, this was all very much in the air during the City Hall debate which we opened with. And in a way, that debate was about salvaging the traditional taxi industry. But it seems that the public loves Uber with its free bottles of cold water and breath mints, not to mention the 30% cheaper fares. It's hard to go back.
Well, it is. But you do feel bad for taxi drivers who seem totally at risk of losing their livelihoods. But in the meantime, we have a whole new type of driver, the UberX driver.
Well, yeah, okay, let's think back to our conversations for this podcast. First, we met Sahar, the daughter of the taxi driver, clearly on the cold front of Uber's disruption to the taxi industry. And then we met Yassim, the new Canadian and hardworking UberX driver. And then Emily, the young UberX driver who wants to earn a bit of extra cash between acting gigs and likes the freedom. And finally, Konstantinos, the man who wants to make a career out of driving and uses Uber to pick up a little more cash.
So with Uber, gone is what was essentially a closed shop of traditional taxi driving, where there were few women and few part-time workers. Uber offers anyone with a car and a clean driving record a new way of making money. But how do we draw a line to connect all these new UberX drivers? What do they have in common?
Well, I'm not sure they have much in common besides the fact that they drive for Uber. And maybe that's the point. There are so many Uber drivers, around 15,000 in Toronto, that they don't have to have anything in common. And really, the vast majority of them only work an average of 5 hours a week.
And I think that's why my ambivalence is probably pretty reasonable. I like using Uber, and I also appreciate that it's opened up opportunities for people. But I do really feel uneasy that Uber has no real investments in the cities it operates in. And as we saw in Austin, when it doesn't get what it wants, it can just leave.
Yeah, I guess what we're really seeing is the risks and the rewards of the freight economy. And then we can also look at how that impacts local politics, especially when they seem to be caught flat-footed when it comes to innovative companies who are leading the freight economy. So, like the taxi industry, we can also ask our city politicians, didn't you see Uber coming? And you know what I discovered while researching this story? The greatest irony of all. Where is Uber shoveling a big chunk of its profits? Into research that will help to develop the driverless car.
Driverless cars? Okay, Uber, the company that relies on drivers the world over, is actually funding an innovation that will effectively put all those drivers out of business?
Yeah, it's the truth. Uber is toe-to-toe on the race to develop the driverless car, competing with the likes of Google, Apple, and Tesla.
Well, if Toronto City Council found it hard to figure out how to regulate UberX drivers, then how are they going to cope with driverless cars?
And all this talk here today about how Toronto has to come to grips with Uber, in just a few years it could be a pointless conversation. It's a bold new chapter, and we're not going to tackle it today. And actually, it's a bit of a dot, 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 because in the next couple of weeks, we hope to have an addendum to the story, which is exactly about this. How do you keep up with regulation?
But for now, for this episode, let's sign off.
All right, okay. For now, for a short while, we'll sign off.
And I'm going to say my goodbyes. This is my last episode with the egg carton because I'm moving to the UK.
I know. It's true. It's sad and we're going to miss Nina. But for now, we'll take a break over the summer to regroup. And I guess it's time for the closer. Our program today was recorded and mixed and produced by yours truly, Samantha Hodder, with
Nina Wood.
A special thanks today goes out to Ted Graham and our fleet of very helpful UberX drivers and the whole scene down at City Hall on the day of the Uber vote, the day I won't soon forget. Today, I'm putting out a personal appeal to you, our listeners, and here's how you do it. Just when you're on iTunes, click that little subscribe button. Not just download and listen, but subscribe. And while you're there, you could even leave a review. All of these things are very helpful, and you can find all of these links on our website at theeggcarton.ca. You can also find us on Twitter at Listen to the Egg. Until next time, thanks for listening, and goodbye.